me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I don't care if we never get back.
Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. So it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the ball game.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, we'll have a lot of fun.
Take me out to the crowd.
Will you love?
The Andrews Sisters singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game introduced today's program. This being the summer of 2018 when we have baseball and we also have the World Cup. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. According to news sources, vinyl records are becoming popular again. In particular, the 33 1/3 RPM records. In which decade did Columbia Records begin the first mass production of the 33 1/3 RPM LP? Was that A, the 1930s, B, the 1940s, C, the 1950s, or D, the 1960s? So, which decade was that? And question number two, who was the very first rock artist to perform at Yankee Stadium? Was that A, Bruce Springsteen, B, the Beatles, C, Billy Joel, D, Rolling Stones, or E, Paul Simon? First rock show at Yankee Stadium, who was that? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 22nd. A couple of unusual songs were released on this day in music history. It was, after all, on this day back in 1963 that the Safari single, Wipeout, was released. As noted in songfacts.com, this is a popular instrumental track with a continuous surf rhythm. The only vocal is the occasional phrase, Wipeout. It does, however, contain one of the most famous drum solo breaks played and recorded. And it was half a century ago today, back in 1968, that Mason Williams' Classical Gas was released. As noted in songfacts.com, Mason Williams said that he wrote this song as fuel, or a standby, for the classical guitar in case anyone wanted to hear him play something for them. Therefore, he called it Classical Gasoline. During recording, Gasoline was inadvertently abbreviated to Gas by the music copy list, giving it the name Classical Gas.
One threw a party in the county jail. The prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard this locked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock.
And in country music news, we have Elvis's Jailhouse Rock as a tribute to DJ Fontana, 1931 to 2018. Drummer on slew of Elvis's hits dies at age 87. This is written by Kurt Gottschalk, published in the New York Times on the 16th of June, 2018. DJ Fontana, whose simple but forceful drumming behind Elvis Presley helped shape the early sound of rock and roll, died Wednesday at a hospital in Nashville, Tennessee. He was 87. His death was confirmed by his son David, who said Fontana had been in poor health since breaking his hip in a fall last year. Fontana was the first drummer in Presley's band and played with him for 14 years, from Presley's earliest days in the national spotlight through the 1968 television special called simply Elvis, that was widely held as Presley's return to form. He backed Presley on more than 450 recordings, including hits like Hound Dog, All Shook Up, Blue Suede Shoes, and It's Now or Never, and was seen playing with him in the movies Loving You, Jailhouse Rock, and G.I. Blues. He was later an in-demand studio musician in Nashville.
Folks, for heaven's sake, no one's looking at a chance to make a break. Buster turned to shifty and he said, nix, nix, I want to stick around, I want to get my kick.
Fontana's entry into rock history came by way of his job as a member of the band on Louisiana Hayride, a popular country music radio show broadcast from Shreveport, Louisiana, his hometown. Presley, then at the beginning of his career, appeared on the show in October 1954. Fontana played with the band on that broadcast, and the next year he became a permanent member. Presley's blend of country, blues, and other elements was already distinctive. The addition of Fontana's powerful drumming raised it to a new level. Elvis and Scotty and Bill were making good music, drummer and singer Levon Helm said in an interview with the Associated Press in 2004. But it wasn't rock and roll until DJ put the backbeat into it. In its early days, the band played mostly the country music circuit, where guitars, mandolins, and fiddles dominated, and drummers were generally shunned. On early television appearances, including Presley's first on the television version of Louisiana Hayride back in 1955, Fontana was hidden behind a curtain, his drums heard but not seen. By the time Presley made his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in September of 1956, a performance seen by 60 million viewers, the drums were in plain sight, and Presley was well on his way to becoming a worldwide phenomenon. And in classical music related to sports, we have this article entitled Classical Music and Football. By the way, that's called soccer in the USA. This is written by Anthony Bateman on the 12th of June, 2014, and published in The Guardian. With the World Cup started, even the Guardian's classical music team's thoughts have turned briefly to the beautiful game. Pop's footy anthems, the good, the bad, and the ugly, are legion. But how has the game provided classical composers with inspiration? Anthony Bateman selects his soccer-inspired pieces. For example, there's Sir Edward Elgar. He Banged the Leather for Goal is the name of the song, 1898. It's hardly one of his masterpieces, but Elgar actually penned a football chant. A fan of Wolverhampton Wanderers, after the pair saw Wolves play Stoke City in February of 1898, Elgar read a report of how the burly center forward, Bill Malpas, banged the leather for goal. He set the line to music, though it remained unperformed until 2010. Then there's Bohuslav Martinů. A song called Halftime. This was written in 1924. When the Czech composer Martinů was living in Paris in the 1920s, he enjoyed few things more than the thrills and spills of the terraces. This found expression in his orchestral rondo, Halftime, a work that, in the words of the composer, portrays the tension of spectators at a football match. And then there's Dmitri Shostakovich, The Golden Age, written in 1930. Shostakovich was more than just a football fan. The composer avidly followed Zenit Leningrad, wrote football articles for the Soviet sporting press, and was even awarded an honorary refereeing qualification, though his eyesight was hardly up to him using it. At matches, Shostakovich comported himself like a little boy, leapt up, screamed, and gesticulated. His propaganda ballet, The Golden Age, follows the fortunes of a Soviet football team as they visit the corrupt and decadent West. Throughout the piece, the wholesomely athletic music of the footballers and other Soviet sportsmen is contrasted with the morbidly erotic dances of the Western Europeans. And then there's Benedict Mason, Playing Away, from 1933. Michael Nyman's After Extra Time in 1996. James McMillan, The Berserking, from 1998. Mark Anthony Turnage, The Silver Tassel, from 1997. James McMillan, For Neo, from 2002. Two piano vignettes celebrating McMillan's passion for Celtic. According to the composer, his piece, 25th May 1967, is a brief flourish of boyhood delight, recalling the night in Lisbon when the boys became the first British winners of the European Cup. McMillan describes the piece as reflective and intimate, with the lilt and accent of an Irish folk song. And finally, there's Cameron Insay, Symphony No. 5, produced in 2005. American-Turkish composer Cameron Insay's Grand Choral Symphony was composed to mark the centenary of Turkey's most successful and fabled football club, Galatasaray. The work is a pious and holy unironic celebration of fandom, a sort of football oratorio. As Bill Shankly famously put it, some people believe football is a matter of life and death. I can assure you, it is much, much, much more important than that. And in jazz music news, we have this backstory of the song, Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball? That was written by Woodrow Buddy Johnson and Count Basie back in 1949. And this backstory is published in BaseballAlmanac.com. The Library of Congress received 4 music-related requests in their copyright office in 1947, the year Jackie Robinson made his Major League debut. Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball was easily the most famous of those 4 honorary songs and an instant classic. The song was originally written and performed by Buddy Johnson, who recorded it in 1949 and saw it peak on the charts at number 13. That same year, Count Basie re-recorded Did You See Jackie Robinson Hit That Ball on the Victor label, and his version became a true baseball standard. Mickey Mantle said, here was a player who had without doubt suffered more abuse and more taunts and more hatred than any player in the history of the game. And he, Jackie Robinson, had made a special effort to compliment and encourage a young white kid from Oklahoma. Keeping with today's summer sports theme, our music research and technology article is titled, Music and Sports. This is written by Ketke Karanam, and it was published on the 7th of December 2015 in syncproject.co. Many of us listen to music during exercise. We have a favorite playlist for running or cycling. We put on the headphones at the gym. We instinctively know that somehow music listening helps us during physical exertion. In recent years, research has accumulated on the various effects of music listening during exercise and has revealed interesting findings on exactly why and how music helps us. In addition to common experience, it is quite well established in literature that music listening does indeed support performance in sports. In addition to helping us during exercise, the positive effects of music listening also extend to the period before and after the workout. For instance, in a study published in 2007, researchers found that warming up to music resulted in higher heart rate during the warm-up than in the absence of music, as well as increased peak anaerobic power after the warm-up, indicating an enhanced ability to perform short, powerful, energy-consuming actions. In addition to making warm-ups more efficient, music can also support recovery after physical exertion. In this study, researchers found that athletes who listened to music after strong physical exertion showed more voluntary physical activity, a greater decrease in blood lactate concentration, as well as greater decrease in perceived exertion than athletes who recovered without listening to music. The researchers speculate that the reason why music supports recovery is that it kept the athletes moving after a moment of high exertion and therefore helped clear lactates from muscles. These results are important for individuals such as professional athletes who typically are not able to listen to music during the exercise but can choose to do so before and after. According to research results, running in sync with music help the participants run longer. The study showed that athletes who ran in sync to the beat of motivational as well as neutral music became exhausted by the exercise more slowly, felt less exhausted, and also showed lower oxygen consumption than those who ran without music. However, lactate levels were the lowest with motivational music, and only motivational music improved mood. This is an interesting finding because typically it is thought that music exerts most of its effects through emotion. It could then be that if one is only looking to just run that extra mile, you need not particularly believe the music will motivate you. What about music where you do not maintain a steady rhythm in movement? An increasingly popular form of exercise is interval training. Instead of maintaining a lower level of exertion for a longer period of time, like in an aerobics class, interval training aims at short bursts of maximal exertion and short periods of rest in between. A recently published study investigated the effects of music listening on performance in sprint interval training. In the study, subjects cycled in an all-out manner four times for 30 seconds, with or without music, evaluated as motivational. The researchers measured peak and mean power output during cycling, perceived exertion, and perceived enjoyment. According to the results, peak and mean power as well as enjoyment were better in the music condition, meaning that with motivational music, individuals reached better physical performance and also enjoyed the highly strenuous activity more. The tight link between music motivation and physical performance has led some researchers into the realm of the avant-garde. Researchers at the Max Planck Institute have, in fact, created gym equipment that double as musical instruments. You play them by exercising, called gymmin by the researchers. A study published in the prestigious journal PNAS on the effects of these gym instruments showed that the musical agency, the action of producing music, that this equipment produces is highly motivating and results in less perceived exertion during exercise. In summary, music listening during physical exercise produces a number of positive effects, ranging from better performance to more enjoyment. The effects most probably stem from the link between rhythm and movement. By syncing to the beat, individuals produce more efficient movements. Another mechanism by which music supports physical performance is based on emotions. By listening to motivating music, people find the inner strength to work harder. However, both music and physical exercise take many forms, and the effects of music listening always depend on a multitude of factors. Therefore, despite great advances in research, we are still far from a comprehensive picture of effects that music can have on physical performance. We at the SYNC Project Performance hope that these research studies will contribute to the understanding of why and how music can support athletic performance.
Just a round and bird, head up our home. It's a brown eyed, handsome man. Anyone can understand the way I feel. Oh, put me in coach. I'm ready to play today. Put me in coach.
John Fogerty, center field, introduces our rock and pop music item. It's actually the backstory to John Fogerty's 1985 hit, Center Field. And this is written in songfacts.com. This song was inspired by Fogerty's childhood memories of baseball, and although he didn't play the game, he loved watching it and hearing the stories his father would tell about the legendary New York Yankee center fielder Joe DiMaggio, who, like Fogerty, was born and raised in San Francisco. In an interview with MLB.com, Fogerty explained, "I'd hear about Ruth and DiMaggio, and as my dad and older brothers talked about the Babe's exploits, their eyes would get so big. When I was a little kid, there were no teams on the West Coast, so the idea of a major league team was really mythical to me. The players were heroes to me, as long as I can remember," Fogerty added. "It is about baseball, but it is also a metaphor about getting yourself motivated, about facing the challenge of one thing or another, at least at the beginning of an endeavor, whatever is necessary for the job." Fogerty left Creedence Clearwater Revival in 1972 and released Center Field in 1985. The 1984 Major League Baseball All-Star Game was held at Candlestick Park in Fogerty's hometown of San Francisco. This led to erroneous reports that he watched the game from the center field bleachers, leading to the song. A song about baseball was a risk, as the sport isn't exactly rock-worthy. In the MLB.com interview, Fogerty said, "Over the years, it seemed like sports songs just didn't qualify into the rock and roll lexicon. I realized creating this song would very much put baseball in a rock and roll setting. I expected to be roundly thrashed by owners of the Flame. Along with Talking Baseball and Take Me Out to the Ball Game, this quickly became one of the most popular baseball songs ever. It's a fixture at ballparks between innings of games and plays continuously at the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York." So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, in which decade did Columbia Records begin the first mass production of the 33 and a third RPM LP? Correct answer. Answer B, the 1940s. As noted in a 6/15/1986 Chicago Tribune article by Phil Vettel, through 1896, most recordings were made on cylinders, although flat discs existed. But that year, Emil Berliner introduced a new way to cut grooves into discs, resulting in a product that produced better sound than cylinder recordings. Because discs were also easier to store and more easily mass-manufactured, they caught on quickly with the American public and soon captured the lion's share of that market. Those discs were played on a Berliner machine called a gramophone, which spun the records at 78 RPM. Selection of that speed was just happenstance. The inventor needed a motor to drive the record player, and he found one that turned the disc at 78 revolutions per minute, although actually it was more like 78.26 RPM. It was a fluke, really. The inventor found a motor that worked at a certain speed and invented the disc to accommodate the motor. The 78 RPM records ruled the market for a long time. The desire for a slower plane speed persisted through the Great Depression, the obvious attraction being that more music would fit on a record that didn't spin so fast. But getting more music out of the same size disc proved to be a perplexing technical problem. The slower the record spun, the worse the sound quality became, and moving the grooves closer together was unworkable for several reasons. But Columbia was able to begin mass-producing long plane LP records at 33 and a third RPM after World War II in the late 1940s. And the answer to our second question, who was the first rock artist to perform at Yankee Stadium? And the correct answer is answer C, Billy Joel. In 1990. As noted in a July 14, 2011 New York Times article by Alan Kosnan, when the Beatles played at Shea Stadium on August 15, 1965, and again a year later, I was a little puzzled, maybe even a little miffed, at their choice of location. As an 11-year-old, I had what I figured was a clear idea of what was right and proper, and to me, the spanking new Shea Stadium was the home of the Mets, an upstart team that seemed destined forever to inhabit the basement in the National League standings, and not, therefore, the kind of place that deserved the Beatles' magic. As I saw it, the Beatles were to music as the Yankees were to baseball. And it was they were going to play at a baseball stadium? Yankee Stadium was the place for them. I admit there are other equally silly ways of looking at it. You could reason, for example, that playing at Shea was perfect. The Yankees were the establishment, and the Mets, like the Beatles, were the feisty newcomers, eager to take on the world. Billy Joel, by the way, the only musician to perform at both Yankee Stadium and Shea Stadium. So let's close out today's program with a bit of music not dedicated just to summer and sports, but perhaps most importantly in the times today, to unity. This is the song We Are Family by Sister Sledge from 1979. And as noted in songfacts.com, the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball team used this as their theme song in 1979. Led by Willie Pop Stargell, they came back from a 3-1 deficit to defeat the Baltimore Orioles in the World Series. The song got constant airplay on Pittsburgh radio stations as the Pirates' season progressed. For the team, it represented players of different backgrounds coming together as one. The words, "the family," were printed on top of their dugout during the World Series. We are family. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. So long. Until next time.